Hello, everyone, and welcome to Investing.com's very own financial podcast, The Bell Ringers. With me here today, my good friend and fellow analyst, Jesse Cohen.
What's up, folks?
And today we'll be going over all the good topics from this week, everything that happened last week, and Jesse's going to tell us all about it. So, Jesse, what do we have this week on the agenda?
Well, starting off from last week, obviously, Wall Street's upbeat performance will be in focus. We'll also discuss some of the major earnings that we had last week. And finally, we're going to touch on the ECB's latest policy meeting. And turning our attention to the week ahead, it's the Federal Reserve week. So obviously, we're going to talk about that. More earnings are in focus.
Another lightning round.
Another lightning round is in store. And finally, we're going to talk about the July jobs report and what to expect from that.
And our stocks of the week, of course.
Stocks of the week. I'll be talking about Shopify.
And I'll be talking about Tesla.
There we go.
All right. So let's dive right in. A timer, 3 minutes, a bell at the end, and we move on. So let's start with markets at all-time high. Is it too easy?
Listen, I did not expect to see the S&P at 3,025 already. A couple weeks after jumping by 3,000, you know, I figured we'd see some sort of a pullback, but this market just doesn't know what a pullback is.
Nah, the Fed just teaches it to go higher and higher, and no pullback as long as we're cutting rates, definitely.
Well, obviously, we saw the S&P and the NASDAQ both hit record highs. The Dow kind of lagged behind due to disappointing results from the index heavyweights, Boeing and Caterpillar. But even that, the Dow managed to eke out a weekly gain. So really, you got to ask yourself, is it really that simple? Or just all you got to do is go long the market and boom, you're bound to make some money.
Right. But like every time, you know, the market is high, there's always, I think JP Morgan came up last week and saying that they're expecting a very tough quarter for stocks ahead.
So of course, it's just JP Morgan trying to cause a dip to get better prices, buy back some stock.
So every time we're at all-time highs, there's always this risk at buying at all-time highs. So on the one hand, yes, it's easy because, you know, it's more likely to go up than down at this point. But on the other hand, you know, when you're buying at all-time high, you're putting a pretty big risk premium. And I think that this is what folks might start to become afraid of going forward.
With that being said, you could have said that 100 points ago on the S&P.
Oh, you could have said that 500 points ago.
So again, at the end of the day, you don't want to fight the Fed. You don't want to fight the trend. The trend is clearly going higher right now. We talked about 3,000. We're at 3,025 right now. 3,050 by the end of the week. Who knows? I saw some wild forecasts on Twitter last week talking about 4,000 on the S&P by the end of the year. Could you imagine something like that?
After the first half we've had, that would be crazy. I think it would be unprecedented to have this kind of performance after the first half that we had. That was already very, very strong. You look at most of like the top tech stocks, but all up like 40, 50, even more. So yeah, I think I would be very surprised to see the S&P having such a... But then again, you know, the Fed might say to 4,000 we go, and then that's it, we're gone.
But again, like you said, really, the risk that we run when indices are at such elevated levels is everybody's waiting for the pullback, and all we need is just the clearest sign of panic, and that can just cascade and really cause, you know, a waterfall effect. You know, they say you take the stairs up and the elevator down. So in a market like this, that elevator can drop real fast, real quick. And sometimes without even that much of a catalyst that can really cause such a drop.
Well, then again, sometimes the good thing is that you can take advantage of this panic selling. And if the underlying factors are not changed, then, you know, you can just buy the dip and continue. So I'll be looking to see if there are more maybe worrying signs of a long-term draw before I really, you know, ditch whatever I have. You know, so far we're in buy the dip mode. And that's, I guess, what we'll stay. But going forward, we've had some pretty stellar earnings last week, and we want to focus on two in particular.
We had such low expectations for this earnings season that, you know, so far we've managed to get some pretty impressive results. It doesn't matter if the bar's been lowered, you know, to such a drastic degree. At the end of the day, a company like Google, which reported blowout results on Thursday, to me, like, it was hard to find something I didn't like in that report. And to throw on top of that a share buyback plan, which was a $25 billion. I mean, that's just an added bonus. And really, the reaction in the stock that we saw was up more than 12% at one point. It closed up 9% on Friday. This isn't a stock that trades, you know, at $34. This is a $1,000 plus stock.
Right, but it wasn't necessarily expensive compared to other tech stocks. And if you compare them all, I think Google has been the cheapest for quite some time. And so the fact that a beat delivered, you know, better than expected, maybe results and returns after market, I'm not very surprised by that. And I think that, you know, we've talked about it quite a bit in the past. And as long as you know Google, your Amazons, your Facebooks, your Microsoft, they're going to be hard to topple. They're going to be hard to dethrone. And people love counting those guys out. But every time they're being counted out, you can buy the dips. And you know, they continue 20% growth for Google. 20% growth. That's amazing.
3 months ago, people were calling for the end. You know, Google's best days are behind it. And you know the drop in ad revenue was such a concern that the street already, you know, took it to this extreme.
And this is where you make your money, ladies and gentlemen.
That's where
this is exactly where you make your money. But let's move on to Facebook,
another company which we saw, you know, this time last year.
People love to kill it.
People love to kill Zuckerberg. People love to kill Facebook.
But he won't die, and it's evident by the numbers that we're seeing. Listen, you know, in the latest report.
At the end of the day, as long as the advertisers love Facebook, it doesn't matter what I think about it. You know, the social media network.
And the politicians themselves, when you look at the Democratic candidates that want to break up Facebook, where do they advertise? On Facebook.
Exactly.
That just shows you how strong the platform is, that even the people that want to break it up and hate it, hate it.
$16.9 billion in revenue.
They can't do anything against it. They need it as well. So that's strong. If we're talking about, you know, the fines, we can address it. To me, it's just kind of the cost of doing business. I'm not overly, you know, worried about future fines. Yes, they're going to maybe meddle in the business a little bit. But I really think that both Google, Amazon, Facebook, all these companies are just strong enough to resist at this point.
Even a $5 billion fine is simply a slap on the wrist, you know, for companies these sizes. So at the end of the day, what's a $5 billion fine for Facebook? It's you know, it was simply a month's worth of revenue. So again, might be too much ado about nothing. And you know, the theme from our first segment was a good opportunity to buy the dip. Hey, these are regulatory headlines and antitrust concerns.
Not a bad opportunity either. Exactly. I agree. Exactly. All right, so let's move on and shift our focus to Europe. We've had the ECB not cutting rates, even though a lot on Wall Street and in other financial centers anticipated a cut this time around. But no, only in September, which you would have known if you were listening to the past podcast.
This is exactly what we said. This time last week, we were recording the podcast. Market expectations for ECB rate cut were at 50% at the time. And both of us said that is 50% way too high, because there's absolutely zero chance that Draghi would have cut rates with the Fed coming up this week. It was clear that Draghi would wait and see, obviously, what the Fed does. He will wait and see how the data pans out throughout the rest of summer. And you know,
I still think that we're seeing a cut in September, regardless of the data that we see now. It was either now or September. We thought it was going to be September. It's probably going to be September.
And in addition to the cut, I reckon we get a resumption of QE as well,
which is even maybe more important than the rate cuts to markets.
Because for the most part, Thursday's meeting and you know Thursday's Draghi performance was as dovish as can be without him actually cutting rates on Thursday. Because he signaled,
oh yeah, all the bazooka's coming. Everything was there.
The bazooka's coming. Everything was there in September. Just be prepared because a rate cut's coming. A QE is coming.
Yeah, yeah. If you're looking for an exact quote, the central bank expects to interest rate to remain at their present or lower levels.
Or lower, because that's something that phrase didn't appear.
And it's not even one step lower. It might be a couple of steps and even lower, not just like one cut. but maybe even more going into the future. So that's
and really, it's that phrase, the or lower, which didn't appear in the prior statement, is, you know, pretty much the clearest signal yet. And, you know, thinking about where the ECB goes down the road, because Draghi's only, you know, he's only there for two more months. I need to ask myself if Christine Lagarde is taking an active role in these discussions.
I think she has to be, now that we know that she's going to be the one taking over. Again, you know, it's like if you're going to fire your coach, you're not letting him like run the transfer window, because you need your new coach to build your team, you know,
exactly,
for the ongoing season.
I like that one. Yeah.
So in my opinion, yes, she's involved. She may be the reason why we didn't get a cut today. That we didn't get a cut last week.
And that
maybe they want to talk it over. Maybe Christine Lagarde doesn't even want to cut rates. You never know. And that would be quite a change up for markets.
In this world of, you know, central bank conspiracies and you know, this and that, nothing would surprise me. And if Lagarde was actually taking an active measure in these discussions as head of you know, the soon to be ECB, then nothing will surprise me.
All right, that was the week that was. And now we'll be moving on to, from an earnings perspective, maybe a little less exciting than last week, but from a central bank perspective, I mean, I kind of knew what the ECB had to say, and I was confident the Fed is an entirely different business.
This is it. This is the big one. This is the meeting. This is the week that markets have been waiting for months, pretty much.
I think so, yes.
Basically, all eyes on Jerome
early
Powell.
June, you know, at the latest, that's where we really started to think about what was going to happen in July. I remember that very clearly.
And here we are, the late July meeting, July 31, this Wednesday. Easing, for the most part, is expected. At this point, 25 basis point cut is the base case. 50 basis points has already been priced out by markets for the most part. And besides really what the Fed has to say in the statement, I'll be looking at what Powell has to say in the press conference. Because if he goes off script, and with his prior, you know, his inefficiency to really communicate to markets,
that's been a problem.
All eyes will be
no doubt.
Him.
And one little thing to note is that the last two easing cycles began with 50 basis point cuts. If we're looking back at the past two, after raising, they didn't just go for like a chill 25 basis point cut. They went for 50. So there is a case that historically this is how it happens, even though I've said it numerous times before, I don't see a way that 50 basis point cut happens right now. You know, 25 is, it's a preemptive cut. That's even how they're selling it,
it's not really
data dependent even.
They want to call it a preemptive cut. They want to call it an insurance cut.
I call it Donald Trump cut.
Let's be real here. It's a Donald Trump get off me cut. It's the I'll give the market what it wants cut. Now give me some room, because, you know, for the most part, and we've been saying this for weeks already, that the economy really isn't on that, you know, in terms of activity and where it is, and we'll get into that in the next segment.
But if we're looking at
on solid footing
at the GDP that we got, you know, and if you know that the GDP is about 70% of consumer consumption, and that was up 4.3%, so consumer spending is going great. Like we're talking a lot of times about Wall Street and Main Street, but Main Street right now is completely oblivious to this so-called recession fears that the Fed is calling.
I guess I'm just a lot more optimistic than the Fed. But in my opinion, we just get this one cut and we're done. Now, obviously, Powell won't be able to say that because the markets would have a panic attack.
They would.
But for the most part, I'm looking for Powell to really, draw this fine line of, you know, promising that more cuts could be possible in the future. But not
like you said, though, he's the worst at communicating. So I wouldn't take, like, even if he wants to communicate something, we won't get it. We're not necessarily get what he means. And that's terrible. But let's move on. And back by popular demand, seeing that we've gotten some really good reviews on this segment in the past week, let's go for an earnings lightning round And let's go.
You ready? I'm ready.
Let's go.
I'm ready.
Beyond Meat, Monday after the closing bell. What do you think?
Beyond Meat. Well, as a plant-based meat eater, I'm a big fan of the company. However, the stock itself, up 700% from its IPO, is a bit too frothy for me, a bit too lofty in terms of the valuations.
I think you're being nice. It's straight up crazy to buy Beyond Meat right now. That being said, there's a lot of money to be made up on the bubble on the way up. And you make a lot more money, and shorting Beyond Meat is not a good idea either.
Nah, well,
so if you're not eating,
shorts will get ripped.
If you're in, ride it, no problem. But you know, if you see signs of trouble, get out.
Listen, it's up 700% so far this year. So that report will have to be perfect in order to not disappoint.
All right, Tuesday before the bell, we get MasterCard.
MasterCard, one of my favorite stocks of the year, one of the best Dow performers, up almost 50%. I expect the credit card company to report more solid growth in revenue, solid growth in earnings, and I'll be looking at gross revenue figures also, just to see how the credit card company itself is dealing with economic activity.
To me, it's simple. Whenever I look at credit card companies, a strong economy and strong retail sales equals strong results. That's a very simple equation when you're looking at, you know, payment processors. The more business activity happens in the market, obviously the more money they make. We've just said that consumption was up 4.3%. You know, that's a good sign for MasterCard and Visa and all the payment processors.
And if those prior reports from Visa and American Express are any guidance, MasterCard should deliver more healthy results.
AMD Tuesday after the closing bell.
Well, AMD trading at the highest level in more than 10 years, one of the market's darlings of 2019. I'm expecting solid growth in its GPU units, which obviously has been the major driver of the stock's amazing performance of the year. And also, I'll see if they continue to grab market share from their larger rivals, Intel, NVIDIA.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I think that Intel has messed up over the past year or a couple of years, and AMD has taken advantage of that. I still think that investors kind of like to get ahead of themselves with AMD. It's kind of the stock that people like to get excited about. Stocks that people like to be excited about, sometimes, a lot more volatile than others and more risky than others. So I'm cautious going into earnings.
And Tuesday's big earnings event after the bell, Apple.
So for me, Apple, the same as Facebook, Google, Microsoft, people love to call it dead. People love to say it's 2016 all over again. But if you look at 2016, the company emerged a lot stronger. And as long as Apple has literally more money that it knows what to do with, and that it's generating such strong cash flows, I mean, yeah, maybe there's things to change. Designer left. Yes, there are some doubts, but you can't really bet against the company with Apple's record.
Absolutely. I agree with you on that. And really, besides earnings for this quarter, I'll be looking for any guidance management gives for what we can expect in terms of revenue growth, Q3, Q4, how the situation in China is affecting sales as well. So obviously a lot to see in terms of that report.
All right, we got a couple bonus stocks, even though we're out of the 3 minutes. Let's talk about Qualcomm Wednesday after the bell.
Well, Qualcomm, obviously, the company's suffering a bit from instability around its licensing revenue. So for me, I'll be looking for any updates management will have regarding that. Any issues it will have regarding its antitrust lawsuit with Apple any more legal issues that might arise.
And that's why I like Qualcomm, because it always has tons of potential, which causes it to be a lot of times explosives upwards. And then you get also a lot of negative news concerning litigation that sometimes causes the stock. So it's a perfect kind of cycling stocks where you can really ride all the way to the top and then kind of ride the bottom and ride the top again. So I love it. And GM, our last talk to Thursday before the bell. To me, GM is the best income stocks when it comes to cars. The dividend, very attractive, very stable, especially compared to Ford and Fiat Chrysler and other manufacturers. I am expecting weak guidance. I'm not bullish on the sector in general. So it's hard for me to be bullish on a particular stock if I'm not bullish about the sector.
I'm not expecting anything great from GM. The forecast itself for earnings is $1.43 per share. If that number holds, it would be 21% lower from the same period a year earlier. I think that's all you need to know in regards to the stock and the sector itself, which really all disappointing earnings from Ford, from its major counterparts last week as well.
All right, another week, another lightning round.
Woo! Built up a sweat on that one.
Yeah, those are fun though. And so our last topic, U.S. Manufacturing jobs and unemployment. Basically, we're getting a few indicators on the well-being on the U.S. economy this week.
And interestingly enough, we get all these updates probably after the Fed cuts rates, after the Fed rate cut. We get the jobs data on Friday.
But we've talked about the Fed not relying on data to make decisions anyway. So it wouldn't even matter if those numbers were last week. The Fed has already decided its policy, decided its course, and it does, you know, numbers don't even matter at this point.
Really, we're expecting a jobs growth of 160,000.
Very solid.
Solid, indeed. Unemployment is forecast to hold steady near a 50-year low of 3.7%.
Nothing to complain about.
I think in general, the data that we've received over the past 3-4 weeks definitely pointing to solid economic activity. With the GDP that we got on Friday, which came in at 2.1%. So what we're seeing really is those recession fears that people were talking about and we spoke about at length just a few months ago.
I want to talk about the recession in the context of manufacturing. If you're looking at the last two readings, you know, the output has shrunk, which means that manufacturing is technically in a recession.
Well, you got to break down again, this whole systemic breakdown of the economy itself. Why is manufacturing, bleeding the way it's been, while other sectors of the economy, other areas in the economy are holding up well?
Well, it's just because maybe manufacturing is becoming less and less important in developed nations. In the U.S. again, most of manufacturing, as much as Donald Trump and other people would want U.S. to be a manufacturing powerhouse, there's been a big shift towards services, towards other areas of the economy. But even if we look at the fact that, the output has shrunk over the past couple of readings, it's been barely negative. We're not talking all of a sudden that the U.S. is not manufacturing anymore and it goes down. It's been 0.something%. To me, it's not as big of a risk. I'm looking forward to other readings, because if we're staying in negative territory and if the U.S. isn't really coming out of it, then we might have a problem. But to me, as long as this number is not too negative, is not minus 1% or even 2%, I think that it's a good number.
I'm not reading too much into the whole manufacturing downturn. I think for the most part, obviously, the tariffs with China are affecting supply chains and so forth. But we've shifted so far away from manufacturing as an economy that I don't even pay attention to that.
Until the 2020 campaign, my friend, because it'll be full of manufacturing for Detroit, Ohio, all those places. You're going to be hearing a lot more about manufacturing in the coming months.
Just another thing, in addition to the data, we're going to have our eyes on U.S.-China trade talks, which resume this week again after a brief breakdown in talks. Seems like China are they're showing some goodwill, making some purchases on the U.S. agricultural front. The question is, will Donald Trump show the same goodwill, and will the U.S. and China really get any closer to or reach any progress towards this deal?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm not convinced. I mean, Donald Trump can just go off on something. He just went off on the French president and even dared to say that American wine is better than French wine. In what world are you living in, buddy? But really, I think we'll be smarter after the meeting, because it's been a while since it's been on the agenda. It's been a while since there's been even meetings. So I'm guessing that, we just kind of get some new signals and then see and go from there.
I think at this point, Donald Trump needs to for all we know, he could be asking himself, do I want progress on the U.S.-China trade front? Because if we do get good news on that front,
not again, not
then,
that again.
Then we get more, you know, more. Well, the Fed shouldn't cut rates then.
Not again.
But if the Fed does cut rates, then maybe the U.S.-China trade. Yeah, it's going to be a whole bunch of that stuff coming back again.
I hate that.
So,
all right, but
be prepared.
Let's move on to our last topic this week, our stocks of the week. You want to start?
Let me start off. I'm going to be talking about Shopify. Shopify, the Canadian e-commerce company, which reports Thursday ahead of the opening bell. I recently wrote something about Shopify. The cloud-based e-commerce company has really been one of the big winners of the year so far, up more than 140%. Shares are trading not that far from all-time highs. And when you break it down, really, there's a lot to be excited there. Earnings of 3 cents per share are expected, which would be up 50% from the same quarter a year earlier. Revenue is expected to rise 43% from the same quarter a year earlier as well. So we get, that meteoric monster growth is definitely there.
But the valuation is crazy.
Yeah, sometimes, valuations, you just
gotta
throw them out the window whenever the Fed is cutting rates with the S&P at all-time highs, then maybe valuations and P/E levels
I think that's
really
one of those cases, and I agree with you, but if you're really looking from a fundamental point of view, it's kind of the beyond meat of the e-commerce
sector. It's painted itself as the anti-Amazon. And really, where Amazon might be gearing more towards, bigger players in the field, Shopify has done a great job of, capturing the small and mid-sized customers, the smaller merchants that are, trying to break and build their brand out. Shopify has been their platform of choice. I expect to see great results. Big fan of the company, big fan of management. And despite record high valuations, which you're right, they're definitely a concern, I think the company will definitely, the rally will continue.
I'm worried every time a company goes against a huge tech stock. I was worried when Snap went against Facebook and Instagram and got crushed. So I'm always afraid when those big companies, you go against them, and you just know that they have the power to crush you if they want to do it.
With Snap up 200% this year.
Well, this year, of course, but
it's
up 200% after being down from $29 to $4.
And it's all about timing.
Always is. So
Tesla,
I'm going to be talking about Tesla. So Tesla last week, really bad report. I mean, yes, the company is selling more cars, and it's not making a profit. And you have to ask yourself at this point, will it ever make enough cars? Because, Musk is always talking about how we need to build, economies of scale. But you're already delivering, 400,000 vehicles, this year. And if you can't make a profit on that, how much more demand and how much more cars do you have to sell before you can really turn profitable? Now, not only that, but the CTO, Straubel, founded the company with Musk, basically.
He was there even before Musk. He was there before Musk.
And he left now.
Yeah.
And it's not, I feel like every month we're talking about some
kind of
C-level executive that leaves Tesla. So to me, I've never really been a Tesla bull. I admit this company, I'm a valuation guy, and every time the valuations get a little too high,
it's a cult stock. And really,
you're weaker than expected revenue, weaker than expected profit. Musk has gone back to saying that they won't be cash flow positive in the second half of the year, which is, what held the stock up for now. And Musk is always so good at selling promises.
The
delivery is always, the worst.
That's my issue with Elon Musk. I'm a big fan of Elon Musk, big fan of everything he does. However, he needs to maybe learn how to, underdeliver with the expectations.
Well, look at Wall Street. Wall Street promises
over-deliver
a low bar, and
that's
then
it.
Everyone beats the earnings.
That's the game you need to play on Wall Street. And Elon Musk,
not very good at playing
not
this.
Not very good at that game specifically. Very good at other things, not this specifically.
All right, everyone. That wraps up our episode of The Bell Ringers. You can rate us on your platform where you're listening. It's important. It'll help us get the podcast out there.
Subscribe, Apple Podcast. We're on Google Play. We're on Spotify.
You can find Jesse on Twitter at Jesse Cohen INV. You can find me at Clem Tebow. You can find the Bell Ringers at Bell Ringers Pod. Every time an episode drops, this is where you'll find it first. So have a great week, everyone. Looking forward to see what this Fed weeks bring. It'll be crazy.
Get your popcorn ready, because it's gonna be epic.
So have a good one, everyone, and we'll see you next week.
May the trading gods be with you.